Another belief that you need to discard to get onto your sacred path is that goals are essential for your own success. I am pretty much convinced that there really is a formula for failure, which is nothing more than trying to please everyone and ignoring our own inner impulses. But I do not believe that there is one single formula for success. Living the spiritual life does not mean setting goals and following them assiduously. The way of the sacred quest is different than that. This difference is sensed in this little stanza by Rumi, a Sufi poet who lived 1,000 years ago. He said, "Do you think I know what I am doing? That for one breath or half breath I belong to myself? As much as a pen knows what it's writing, or the ball can guess where it's going next." As an instrument of God, you are ever in the presence of a loving guidance. With this inner awareness, you will not lose sight of yourself and become a homeless bum begging for your next meal if that is not the way of your sacred quest. You will know your purpose, pursue it with vigor, and trust the universe to handle the details. It is this kind of awareness that has led me to work even harder and produce more effectively and feel more purposeful, not a set of goals that I strove toward. I can truly identify with Rumi in this regard. I have never known where I am going. I quiet myself, listen, and then allow myself to be guided. Having goals is a way of abandoning now in favor of a plan for some future now. The absence of a lot of specific goals helps cultivate your awareness that you are not alone on this journey. You begin to trust in the divine guidance to assist you in your present moment. You come to know the universe will handle the details if you surrender and let go somewhat. How to release the importance of goals for success? Be willing. This is the most important suggestion I can offer. Be willing to do whatever it takes to turn that inner knowledge and future pull into your reality. Relax about the future and let it go. Instead, make an active commitment to enjoy this day a little more. The more peaceful you are with yourself and your role here, the more productive and efficient you become. It is very difficult to accomplish anything when you are stressed over the outcome. When you relax and get peaceful, you become inspired and efficient. Toss out the goals and live your life knowing that you are co-creating it. Another belief that you've had handed to you that you'll need to discard is that you must always do your best at everything that you do. Throughout our lives we hear, "I don't really care how well you do as long as you do your best." Examine this idea and you may come up with a different conclusion. You don't really have to do your best. In fact, your best is something that you can never measure or even know. You can drive yourself to neurotic extremes with this idea of always having to do your best. Your best leaves no room for improvement. It means that you have to go all out 100% every single time you do anything. When you remove the stigma of having to perform at a given level, you remove the ego's need to be judged better than others. You are better off to simply do and enjoy and be willing to learn. Stop imposing on yourself and your children the belief that you must do your best. Experiment with performing tasks that seem to flow from your inner promptings, but detach yourself from the need to measure to see whether your efforts have been worthwhile. While meditating, get a picture of yourself being able to do anything. Give yourself permission to be with this image and to forget about the outcome. See how peaceful you feel when you're not being tested, when you're allowed to just be. Give yourself the same permission in all of your daily undertakings. Another belief that you'll need to discard is that dreams are not reality. Most of us were taught to believe in two separate realities. One is our waking reality, the other is our dream reality. In this formula, when we're in a dream state, we're in a world that is unreal. We disregard dreams as a mental exercise that happens only while we sleep. Waking consciousness is considered reality, and dreaming consciousness is considered unreality. I suggest that you reconsider this belief. Imagine that your dreams are simply different aspects of the same reality, and that they contain teachers for you on your sacred path. Begin with understanding that this is primarily a world of energy, and only secondarily a world of material objects. To know your sacred self, you need to perceive energy directly. This is what you are capable of doing in your dream state. The entire basis of your perception shifts from concrete objects to energy shapes. When this is part of your reality, your dream state becomes something that you share with other spiritually attuned beings. Eventually, you can be aware that you are dreaming while you are dreaming. This is called lucid dreaming. In lucid dreaming, you can control your dreams and be able to dream awake. Through the process of dreaming, you perceive other dimensions of reality, which are shut out by your conditioning. I'm not talking here about dream interpretation. I am talking about knowing your dream life and being aware of experiencing dimensions of a reality while you are sleeping, which will also become available in your waking moments. Your dreams are created with the same body and the same brain as is the rest of your perceptual world. It's all yours. You do not leave every night and take on a new brain to experience your nighttime reality. Everything that you are capable of knowing and being convinced of in your dream has a potential for being experienced in all moments of your daily life. Everything. Yes, I know this is a radical notion, but it leads you to know the power of your energy body. You enter your dreaming world with a complete absence of doubt about what you can experience. With that absence of doubt, there are absolutely no limits. Then, when you awaken to what you call your waking consciousness, you still have the same body, the same brain, and the same perceptual equipment, but you introduce doubt. I believe that your dreams do not reveal things about you, but that they are you. They are real, and they can become highly effective in helping you to experience your highest spiritual self. When you do go to sleep, encourage yourself to be aware that you are entering your dream state. Just this awareness is the first step toward higher awareness through dreaming. As you drift off, make a mental note to yourself that you are about to enter the dream state and that you are pleased to be aware of it. Make an effort before you drift off to consciously see elements of your upcoming dream. Tell yourself you will make a note of an object, a room, or a specific location while you're in the dream. Experience as much detail as you can concerning the object while dreaming. If it is a lamp, for instance, bring it closer to you with the power of your mind. Examine the color and the shape and the intensity of the light. You want to make direct contact with your energy body, that special body of energy that coexists at all times with your physical body. By examining the content of your dreams, you will give yourself access to this higher energy. You will prove to yourself that your mental energy is a phenomenon that you can manipulate with practice and effort. Eventually, you will be able to access this energy in all moments of your life. In the first part of this tape, I've described the ideas and opinions you've been exposed to that have probably influenced your life. Many of those ideas, given to you by others, may now be your daily reality, defining for you what is possible and impossible in your life. I've encouraged you to abandon many of those beliefs and to make a new agreement with reality that is based instead on what you know is your truth. Once you know your personal truth, your reality will be free of doubt. You might not think that doubt could have much of an effect on your life, but part of the damage that it creates is that it is so thoroughly etched onto your belief system that it becomes impossible to think any other way. Doubting our potential achievements, we proclaim with certainty just what is and just what is not possible. But when doubt is banished, we come to a knowing that leads to creative and inspired solutions far beyond what we believed was possible. Can you imagine your reality if you were brought up in an environment free of doubt? How would your life be different if you had never heard, "It can't be done, that's not possible, accept your limitations"? What if you had been encouraged to exercise the energy of your mind? You might have used that energy to explore your power to influence other beings and things and the weather and your own creativity. If you had been fortunate enough to be raised without doubt, you would possess an incredible inner sense of your magnificence. Never would you utter sentences that reflect doubt, such as, "I'm not talented enough," "It can't be done," "Get real," and "Don't you know that there are limits to everything?" The sacred self knows no doubt. It has no limits, and it has no boundaries. What would our world be like if we had learned this in childhood? It is time to know that we have a personal responsibility to incorporate the sacred quest in our lives and to introduce our children to this aspect of human life. I offer my own children opportunities to learn about their inner limitlessness in a variety of ways. For example, I invite them outside with me to make clouds. After dinner, we take a blanket outside to lie down and we engage in what has come to be called cloud making. The children start by creating an inner picture of a form they want to see in the clouds. Then they concentrate their energy on a particular cloud, attempting to influence it to design their own inner picture. The neighborhood has gotten used to hearing my kids shout, "I'm making a house, Daddy. Watch my cloud move. I'm moving it with my mind." Beliefs, you see, are handed to you, but knowings come from within. There's a long list of things that you believe about yourself, the world, and God, and your potential, and the fate of capitalism, and so much more. These beliefs, which came to you from outside of yourself, became your very own. Your knowings, however, all came to you as a result of your own experience of having decided to transcend a belief. No one can hand you a knowing. You must have the direct inner experience of the decision-making function to make it a known. Beliefs also will let you down in a crisis, while knowings never let you down. When you believe in something without knowing it, there is doubt attached to the belief. The doubt resides somewhere deep in the recesses of your mind. Nevertheless, it exists as a thought that you will ultimately call upon when you want to put that belief into practice. I remember believing that I couldn't do a backward dive into the swimming pool. Every time I said to myself, this time I can do it, that nagging little doubt would surface at precisely the moment I would attempt the back dive. I'd find my body turning around at the very last second. The tiny doubt attached to the belief about my ability was what I relied upon at the moment of execution. If you believe something based only on what others have told you is true, when a big test shows up, that belief often will let you down. If you have a belief that God will be there for you in a moment of trauma and that any suffering that you are experiencing is just as divine as any joy that you have experienced, but you do not know this, you will find the pain of your disappointment will become an affirmation that God doesn't really exist for you. Your belief will be shattered in a moment of trauma. This is because you are attempting to have a vision of God that has come to you from outside of yourself, and it is weakened with doubt. Knowing God and suffering in the way William Blake wrote about in this following poem would pull you through your trauma safely, as the poet suggests. He says, "Man was made for joy and woe, and when this we rightly know, through the world we safely go. Joy and woe are woven fine, a clothing for the soul divine." Knowings can never let you down because they are woven into the fabric of your being. If you cannot doubt that which you are, and you know that you are, then you will never be disappointed. Again, beliefs have that insidious doubt attached to them, while knowings are free of such contamination. Your beliefs are mental exercises, while your knowings are physical exercises. You may believe that you have no talent for art, but somewhere deep within your consciousness there exists a tiny smidgen of doubt about whether it would prove really true were you to actually apply yourself in a new way. When you know something, it becomes your physical reality, and you act on this knowing at all times. When you merely believe something, whether it be negative or positive, you have a tiny bit of doubt connected to it, and that doubt becomes your reality. Beliefs are mental. Knowings are physical, though they originate as mental beliefs. Beliefs restrict you, while knowings empower you. Louise Hay is a perfect example of this. She's a beautiful and sensitive woman who's written many powerful books on healing and is the publisher of a collection of my own personal affirmations and daily reminders, a little book called Everyday Wisdom. We were on a national television hookup together when a caller asked whether Louise had ever considered any traditional approaches to treating her cancer 8 years earlier. Louise gave the kind of answer that I hope you will be able to cultivate as you see how knowing can empower you to higher levels than you might have considered. She responded, "I knew in my heart that I could not allow them to radiate me or to put chemicals into me or cut me. I just knew that this could not be my method for dealing with this cancer. My knowing led me to other alternatives, which I have written about, and ultimately to the eradication of the cancer from my body. I am not disparaging any other form of treatment. I just knew inwardly that I couldn't go in that direction." The key here is her use of the word knew. She didn't believe in an alternative therapy. She knew that those traditional methods were inconsistent with who she was. She consulted her knowing. That knowing empowered her. Your beliefs are transitory, while your knowings are eternal. Think about many of the beliefs that you have today and how they have shifted over the years. In fact, many of the beliefs that you now hold were met with revulsion and disgust when you first experienced them. There's an old saying, "Fear knocked at the door, and faith answered, and no one was there." Fear stems from doubts we have about our divinity. The antidote to fear is faith. I know within that I am not alone. Ever. I know that I have divine guidance available to me at all times. This inner knowing makes fear impossible. You too are not alone. And you also have omnipresent guidance accessible at will. When you truly know that the loving presence is always with you, the possibility of living with both doubt and fear evaporates. This is a belief that you can't get from another person. It has to have the quality of being a knowing. Then the notion of fear vanishes. The things we most commonly fear can be explained away by lengthy research and investigation. Or, fear can be eradicated with one short and simple statement. I have chosen the second way, hoping to stun you with the simplicity of eliminating fear. Here are some of those fears. Fear of failing. Get rid of it. You cannot fail at anything. Everything you do produces a result. It is what you do with the results that counts. Labeling yourself a failure is meaningless. Fear of disapproval. Get rid of it. You do not need external validation. You are a divine creation of God. Your path is unique and special. Get on with your purpose. Fear of suffering. Get rid of it. You cannot suffer when you know your sacred self. Only the person you imagine yourself to be suffers. Your joy is divine, and so is your suffering. All of the woe is a part of God's plan, bringing transcendent wisdom when you stop judging it. Fear of isolation. Get rid of it. You can never be alone. When you know this, you will never fear loneliness. There is a gigantic support network of loving souls with you on a similar path. Know that to be true. Stay focused on your purpose and forget about being isolated. When you do this, all of the guidance and love that you need will begin to be known by you. Fear of looking foolish. Get rid of it. When you are doing the work of the higher self, you are always on purpose. Whether others judge you as foolish or not is irrelevant. And finally, fear of success. Get rid of it. Replace the fear with knowing that you deserve any prosperity or abundance that comes your way. Know that when you are on the way of your sacred quest, external measures of success will appear. Your success, however, is an inner matter. It is your personal feeling about yourself, and certainly you do not want to be afraid of yourself. These, then, are the six fears that interfere the most with the way of our divine purpose. Know that you possess the inner tools to transform your life, and the fear will be gone before you can utter, "Get rid of it." One of those inner tools is to acknowledge to yourself when fear enters your personal picture. When you do notice yourself experiencing fear, please be sure to gently allow it into your awareness. Feel it and refuse to judge it. The first time I had ever walked out on stage to speak before thousands of people and had forgotten my notes, I experienced severe feelings of fear. Not acknowledging my fear would have kept it right there on stage with me. But I surrendered to the fear while I reminded myself that I was not alone. I went out on that stage with my fear as my companion. Before even a few minutes had passed, I was absorbed in my mission and my fear was gone. By acknowledging the fear and then doing what you were afraid of anyway, you serve notice on those kinds of self-defeating thoughts. You also take a giant step toward banishing doubt from your life. Fear and doubt are partners. That which you doubt will cause you to be afraid. That which you fear creates doubts about your ability to deal with it. Faith is an antidote to fear and doubt. In most cases, the use of the word faith is associated with developing a religious framework for our lives. Faith and worship in this context go together. I'm not talking about faith this way. I honor whatever your religious persuasion is, but I do not want you to confuse religious beliefs with the actual presence of faith. Faith is akin to knowing God, which is different than believing in God or knowing about God. Knowing, as I am speaking about it, is an experience on a cellular level of personal experience, which has not one iota of doubt attached to it. To me, faith is an inner knowing and a capacity to see God in everything, including myself. This kind of faith does not come from books. The kind of faith I am describing does not need a religious service or a holy book. It comes from having the direct inner experience of God as a part of your higher self. It is demonstrated in countless ways in daily life. You do not necessarily have to see this inner light with your senses, yet the experience is known. You know that what you do not see is there for you as well. I've seen my wife, Marceline, demonstrate this interfaith on 7 different occasions when she has given birth to our children. Throughout her pregnancies, she talks to me about her faith in God being with her. She knows that bringing a child into the world is more than a physical experience. She knows that it is a holy opportunity that she has been entrusted with. She has absolutely no doubt about her ability to proceed through all stages of her labor and childbirth without complications, pain, or any suffering. This faith literally puts her into a higher state of awareness, and her physical appearance literally changes. She has actually left the confines of her body. Through the power of her miraculous concentration on what she has to do, she proceeds unaware of surrounding distractions. Her inner faith has literally seemed to banish the doubt about her ability to deliver a baby in a spiritual and pain-free environment. She doesn't believe that God is there for her. She absolutely knows it. The idea of any doubt being present is ludicrous to her. I have been in the labor room with my wife while women all around her were out of control with fear and doubt. Marceline, relying on her faith, is participating in the act of creation as an observer and a faithful participant. In fact, she has taken that same inner knowing, based on faith, to assist other women in having their babies. She accompanies them through the entire process from the first months of pregnancy through delivery, helping them access their inner selves and reassuring them that if they banish doubt, they will have a spiritual childbirth experience. I have yet to see it fail. Understand that faith is a decision that you make internally. It is a mental decision to know that everything is on purpose. Faith then becomes an energy that resides within you at all times. One evening as I sat and watched a spectacular sunset on the Gulf of Mexico, I had a stunning realization. This entire planet, with everything on it, must weigh a zillion, zillion, trillion tons and more. And there is some energy propelling it around the sun, giving the illusion that the sun is actually setting. What was really happening as I sat there was that I was setting and moving in orbit around the sun. I contemplated the enormous amount of energy that is ceaselessly working to move this enormous planet and keep it spinning and staying on course in its yearly excursion. The same energy is moving the sun in a larger orbit and moving the zillions of other celestial bodies in trillions of orbits. This energy gives the illusion that the Earth is standing still, yet we know there is enormous movement. We have faith in that energy. We trust that there will be a sunrise tomorrow morning in the east. We don't believe in it. We know it and have faith in it. That same energy is propelling you through your life and is within you at all moments. That same energy allows your lungs to fill with air, your heart to beat, and your body to stay together rather than to disintegrate. You know it. You have faith in it. That is the same kind of faith that you must develop about your entire life. You are being guided by that heavenly energy. Start to know it. You don't have to see it to believe in it, any more than you have to see the wind to know that it is there. This invisible energy that is doing so much is what you want to know. The inner faith becomes a power that was previously hidden from you. I have seen people walk barefoot as much as 40 feet on red-hot glowing coals without blistering. Before they undertake this adventure, they are trained in nothing more than faith. Their faith gives them the ability to concentrate with an intensity that can prevent their feet from blistering. I have used this kind of faith to swim across the lake in 45-degree water without experiencing any sensation of cold. I type for hours and see poems and chapters emerge without writer's block because I know that I am not alone. The cosmic energy is there within me for my use in fulfilling my personal identity. Inner faith can produce the people and the events that you need. It will work. However, this is not to imply that obstacles will not surface as well. Here are some specific suggestions for removing doubt from your inner inventory. Keep in mind that doubt not only inhibits your sacred quest, but can also be a destructive force in your daily existence. Make a decision that you are going to meet the invisible God within, the loving presence, so that you will know her. This means being willing to spend time in the inner silence of your being. Create the time and space for quieting and listening. Do nothing else but do this daily. Keep in mind always that doubt is produced by your ego. Doubt is not a part of your higher spiritual self. With this awareness, you can learn to observe your doubt rather than choose to own it. Make a list of the beliefs that you still hang on to which no longer serve you. Seeing them in writing will help you identify how absurd it is to stay rooted in the beliefs of others. As you examine your beliefs, see how many start with should and shouldn't. these kinds of sentences were your earliest training and may still occupy such a large space inside you that you no longer have room for any new knowings. Keep in mind always that doubt is a mental experience. If you want a thought to disappear, you can very simply send it away in this moment, just as you can refuse to think an unpleasant thought in any moment because you are in charge of those thoughts, so can doubt be eradicated when it shows up. Say to yourself as if you are two people, the one talking and the one listening, I have this doubt because I have allowed the persuasions of others to become my own beliefs. Now, I will think for myself and know that I do not have to live with doubt. Love is the truest antidote to fear and doubt. When you feel unconditional love for yourself as a divine creation who is here with a purpose, you release all doubt and fear concerning yourself and your place in the world. Therefore, when you experience a moment of fear and doubt, give yourself a portion of mental love and remind yourself that you are a holy creation. As you practice sending yourself love, that becomes what you have to give away. And it is also true that the more love you contain, the less room you have for the energy of fear and doubt. The banishment of doubt from your life forever will put you in touch with a mysterious power that previously had been obscured. I encourage you to let go of the doubt that you were so carefully nurtured on and let in a new knowing. The famous Native American Sitting Bull described this power in the following words. He says, Behold, my brothers, the spring has come. The earth has received the embraces of the sun, and we shall soon see the results of that love. Every seed is awakened, and so has all animal life. It is through this mysterious power that we too have our being. Notice that Sitting Bull refers to this power as love. That love within all things is also within you. Send doubt out of your consciousness and welcome knowing. This first key to higher awareness is also spoken of in the Bible. In Deuteronomy 30, verse 14. It is something very near to you, already in your mouths and in your hearts. You have only to carry it out. I leave the rest up to you. You have only to banish the doubt and carry it out. Banishing the doubt is the first of the four keys to higher awareness. The second is called cultivating the witness. There are many benefits from assuming this witness stance. I ask you to shift your self-perception and cultivate a higher aspect of yourself known as the compassionate witness. Rather than think of yourself as a human being who has thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, begin practicing stepping outside of yourself. So what does it mean to be the witness? Take a moment to reflect on how you view yourself. As you do this, think of what you might mean if you said, I was thinking to myself. You'll find that the phrase implies that there are two people rather than one. One person is the I doing the thinking. The other person is the self receiving the thinker's thoughts. The I is talking to the self, which, when you really examine your inner dialogue, you know you do hundreds of times each day. When you cultivate the witness, you remove yourself from both the I and the self position. Here, from an invisible space outside of your physical body, the witness is detached from your emotions and feelings and behaviors. Here, the witness lovingly watches your entire life transpire. So why become the witness? In my world, nothing ever goes wrong. These words were spoken by Nisargadatta Maharaj in response to an interviewer who, in exasperation, asked Maharaj to talk about the problems in his life. It is for me the single most powerful affirmation I have ever heard. I use it every day of my life, and I have it posted strategically in my office as a daily reminder of its supreme value in my life. In my world, nothing ever goes wrong. Within all of us is the eternal, changeless dimension of our higher spiritual selves. This is the invisible I that talks to the physical self. This is the thinker of the thought. This compassionate observer is not revealed with scientific instruments and doesn't appear on autopsy reports. When you are genuinely able to live in that spiritual domain of the witness, then nothing goes wrong because wrong is not possible for the witness. It is all in order. Nothing is questioned from that perspective. It is like being able to live in heaven where eternity and the soul are at the same time that you are within the physical body. But in this space, the body is not the focal point of existence. I am not suggesting that you need to sit in an ashram and discard all of your physical possessions in order to find this key to higher awareness, although that certainly is a possibility. Instead, I want you to consider how these words of nothing ever going wrong, of having no problems, and of living in a world of the changeless apply to your spiritual awakening. There is so much to learn from these ideas. Cultivating the witness will put you on the path where your higher, sacred self begins to influence your physical, ego self instead of the other way around. As Nisargadatta Maharaj puts it, give it your full attention. Examine it with loving care, and you will discover heights and depths of being which you did not dream of, engrossed as you are in your puny image of yourself. These are startling words describing the power and the value of cultivating the witness. The ordinary way of attachment and suffering can be changed when you learn to access and cultivate the witness attitude of detachment and observation. In order to cultivate your witness, you need to learn to observe your reactions in order to go beyond them. It is the going beyond that is the crux of the sacred quest. There are many ways that you can use the observation process. Here are a couple of them that are very important. The first is observing your body. This is one of the areas of being the witness that most of us have practiced somewhat. In general, we allow our body to function without interference. We are aware that there is the body and that there is a ghost in the machine, if you will. For as long as you can remember, you have been observing this phenomenon of a body. It is also true that you know that the entity that is doing the observing is removed in some dramatic way from that which it is witnessing. As you are listening to these words, you are allowing your body to act out its destiny without your meddling. You are not busy beating your heart or filling your lungs or oxygenating your blood supply or circulating your vital fluids. You allow your body to operate itself, and you allow another part of you to know the way of being the divine, quiet, non-interfering observer. This way has served you well. By just observing your body and detaching yourself from its functioning, it works as perfectly as it was ordained to. If you were constantly monitoring and attempting to control your bodily functions, you would be unduly attached to its outcome, and you would inhibit its natural functions. The times in your life when you worry or interfere with the natural functions of your body are the times when you find it breaking down. Feed your body the wrong foods and it will respond with lethargy and disease. Fail to exercise it and it will become overweight and groggy. Ignore its needs for fresh air and healthy environment and it will fall into disrepair. Feed it narcotic substances or artificial drugs and it will react with violent symptoms. When your body is in any state of disrepair, from being overweight to having back pains or nervousness or influenza or cancer or anything that is not the way of perfect health that your body knows at the cellular and genetic levels, then you are being called back to the position of loving witness. True awareness is a state of pure witnessing without any attempt to fix or change that which is being witnessed. It is a kind of non-judgmental love that by itself is healing. Even if what you observe is sickness or infirmity, the compassionate witness notes the trouble spots and observes them with unconditional love. The absence of judgment in the act of observation itself contributes the appropriate energy of love that the situation needs. The more you can practice witnessing in this way, the more you will find that the mere act of non-judgmental witnessing will keep your life moving on its sacred quest. The mechanics of creation are such that where you place your loving attention and maintain it is where the wave begins making the shift from nowhere to now here. The second way of observing is called observing your mind. Your mind is filled with thousands of thoughts every day. They come and they go like trains in a terminal. One enters, another takes its place, one exits, and along comes another. First, you want to watch your thoughts. Then you want to watch yourself watching your thoughts. Here is the door to the inner space where, free from all thoughts, you experience the bliss and the freedom that transport you directly to your higher self. The simple exercise of watching your mind manufacturing its thoughts will eventually cause unwanted, unnecessary, erroneous thoughts to dissolve. In the process of cultivating the witness, you learn to quiet your mind, to take inventory, and dispose of or reassign thoughts that generate self-defeating or ego-centered responses. In this simple process, you also come to know your spiritual self. Ego-generated thoughts play a huge role in creating the world that the ego wishes to create. Each of my thoughts seem to demand it be considered the most important. Troubles begin with a thought that you put into your mind and allow to fester to the point of anxiety. The anxiety begins to manifest in your life in physically destructive ways. which we call things like arthritis, high blood pressure, and career cardiacs. The loving, non-judgmental energy received from the observer or the witness will allow these thoughts to flow in and out as naturally as the ocean tides. Tides in, tides out. Thoughts in, thoughts out. You will learn to be a witness to your thoughts in the same way that you observe the tide. And the process will cleanse and redistribute and remove thoughts in much the same way as the driftwood on the beach. What remains is generally quite pleasing. Witnessing your thoughts will take some practice. With proficiency comes wonder and delight. Trauma is dissolved in the thinking stage and prevented from manifesting into your everyday world.